Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Outdoor Connection. My guest this morning is Dusty Shelbitsky with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. Dusty, did I get anywhere close to getting your last name pronounced correctly?
Well, Rick, you did pretty darn good. You nailed it just on the head right there.
Well,
great job.
All right, we're done. I quit. I quit while I'm ahead. Yeah, that's, when I first got your email and stuff, I looked at that and I went, man, that's, I'm going to have to practice that one. So, anyway, you're in charge of depredations with the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission. Tell us what a depredation manager does.
Well, I'm a depredation program manager. So I oversee our depredation program for the state of the Nebraska. Depredation, of course, is damage. So our main thing is dealing with landowners who have issue with our big game species specifically, and working with them to fix our basically find some different options to actually help with them to lessen their damage in their cases on a base-by-base situation.
Now, I know the issue that we're going to talk about has been a big issue here in southwest Nebraska, but overall, for the state, how big an issue and how often are you called into play on this type of work?
Oh, on depredation. Depredation is actually a pretty big front across our state, considering Nebraska is 97% privately owned and
right.
Probably one of the biggest agricultural producers you'll find of any row crop species, and then also your grazing type pastures too. So, yeah, we tend to be a big ag state, so wildlife damage affecting somebody's livelihood, yeah, definitely can be a big standpoint in Nebraska for sure.
Now, with the season and respect to us out here in southwest Nebraska, what really prompted the Game and Parks to create this season and take this action at this time?
Well, like I mentioned, Nebraska, we're in charge and tasked with managing big game species for all the people in Nebraska. One of my counterparts, biologist here at Game Parks, mentioned at one time, managing big game species is like riding a bicycle on a fence. So, yeah, it's kind of a balancing act one way or another.
I can understand. I can identify with that, or I can sympathize with that.
In Game Parks, we have a legal mandate basically respond to damage complaints when contacted by landowners and to take action to minimize damage when possible. We have a variety of different depredation options we do utilize. Hunting is our number one choice to use as hunters during the hunting season. What kind of prompted this season was it's an area we've been increasing permits. We've been shuttling hunters to landowners, and harvest is very minimal at that aspect yet. It's tough with our hunting season because our hunting season, basically when the crops are out, our hunting season is still going on, but the elk leave this area. What they're attracted to are these cornfields there with the pivots specifically because they can take up refuge in it. Big reason behind the season is because yeah, we need to try and get some of these elk reduced there more in the area because we continue to get more and increasing complaints on crop damage in these areas. Big point is that hunting hasn't basically fixed the solution on it.
Right.
We've got more hunting in the area. We've focused hunters there. We've directly put hunters in contact with the landowners, but needless to say, it's tough hunting elk when the corn's 10 foot tall. Hot conditions always have a point in it. Guys don't like to hunt when it's hot as much. Also, you're running to the point those elk don't like to leave that corn, and they don't have no need to. So the point is to try and get some hunters in there early where they can harvest elk before the corn's basically too tall, and also as of reducing that population, but also to help mitigate some of that damage, put enough pressure on to maybe get them not to set up base in that cornfield all season long.
I had a
main focus.
I had a question about why now, and you pretty much answered that one. So if you waited until closer to the regular season or during the regular season, the crops have been harvested, their cover is gone, so they drift back off into their canyons or whatever, and you can't get to them. So
yeah, it's tough to find where they go in these areas and what elk are the specific ones that come back into these crop during the crop season. We've been in contact with landowners. Our biologists have covered a lot of ground. We flew some of these areas. It's just tough to locate those elk, period, in this vicinity, because basically in this geographic area there is pretty much all cropland there besides some intermittent pastures in there, a little bit of river area, but not a whole lot of traditional what you'd see in the more higher populated elk populations habitat, what you'd see. So, yeah, it's tough to keep guys there, especially hunters. It's tough to get them to hunt a small little herd of elk what moves around from field to field when they know they have that permit was good for that big unit there, and they can go hunt farther over in the canyon ground to the west where they have better opportunities to see a higher number of elk. So hunter focus is tough also on that situation.
Now, when is the season taking place? What are the actual dates?
This actually season for the special depredation season is starting today, and it will run till basically July 31st.
Okay, for the month of July, basically.
Yes.
Okay, and then how many permits are issued? And I just got another news release from Game and Parks that says we're full. So have we stopped selling permits now?
No, basically our intentions is the permits are set up to be unlimited. And this is allowed because it's a month-long season. It allows people to gain access before purchasing that permit, because it's definitely not about making a dollar here or anything on selling these cheap permits, and that's why you see the cost is pretty low. But needless to say, it's to be able to have permits on the ground, because that's always been a complaint that we don't have permits, or guys can't get permits to harvest these elk when they do have them there locally. And this way landowners or friends or family, anybody who already has access, can get a permit also, and continue to put pressure on those elk and reduce that population in that area.
There have been some landowners I've worked with in the past, not at this level of a depredation, but they had some issues with, you know, getting too many doe, deer, whitetail on their property, and we always joked about, you know, I would come in with a couple of my buddies and we would train them not to go there anymore. And that's kind of what you're doing, is once the elk sense that that's not a healthy place to be, they'll tend to avoid it.
Yeah, elk do that. They respond very well to pressure when you put pressure on. And that's why you see in this geographic area was posted there. Everybody might not have elk on them, but there's a good potential they could. The guys who are mainly having problems, there's a number of them there. Like I said, there's could be 3 to 4 different little herds broke up in this area, small numbers. But needless to say, once those elk start getting some pressure, they're going to move elsewhere.
Exactly.
So that was kind of the concept to make the geographic area a little bit bigger, was because it could provide some additional harvest onto this herd and also increase more pressure on them to them too, to push them back into canyon areas where they're less of an issue.
Who's eligible to buy a permit in this season?
Basically, everybody is eligible to buy a permit. It's open to all residents, non-residents, and also landowners can also get a landowner permit if they own 80 acres agricultural-type property in this area.
This, as early in the year as it is, and July is typically a hot time of year for us, this reminds me of, I grew up in South Texas hunting deer, and it reminds me, even though it was like an October and November hunt, it's still hot there in Texas. And you would go out and you shoot a deer, run out, open it up, gut it out, and then pack it full of ice just as fast as you could to get it back so you didn't have any spoilage. And this is going to be an issue for whoever manages to take an elk.
You bet. It's definitely a challenge, Rick, and we made that clear to individuals that to be prepared to work up this animal, have extra help, be prepared to cool it right away, have cooling either set up for afterwards or cooling right away. One big thing I always recommend is you don't want to saturate that meat in basically ice and water and stuff, because that helps bacteria set in. You want to go to a point of using like frozen jugs. Some guys use dry ice. That's great too for coolers. As long as you don't make direct contact with it. But needless to say, frozen jugs, milk jugs, pop bottles, I use that a lot of times when I do very early season hunts. This actually isn't anything new. This is very similar weather like we have basically in August and September for the most part when we do have early elk season. So, yeah, it's definitely something to pay attention to and get on right away. We have a few things in place. Basically, for the elk, it is telecheck based in for guys can don't have to go to the process of going to check stations and taking more time. Also, when it comes to elk, you're allowed to bone out your animal right away in field. I always say respect the landowner's wishes too, what they'd have for carcass. Maybe after you bone that animal out, they prefer you to move that carcass to a different area they have there, especially not in their fields where they'll be harvesting in the future.
Exactly. Yeah, that's just common courtesy type of thing. And that's something, you know, I do with my landowners. I always ask them where they want stuff in the end. The area that we have mapped out for this, how many landowners in that area had actually been impacted by the elk severely?
Well, I mean, as severely, we deal with at least a minimum of a dozen of them there. Every year it could be a few more here, a few more less. It just depends on their tolerance at that time. I know I've talked to a number of them here the last few weeks what had never contacted us. That's one thing about damage. Every landowner has a different tolerance level. Some guys withstand more. Some of them basically are not so worried about a handful of elk doing some damage, but we do have someone get some very extensive damage in this area, definitely, for sure, Rick.
I have seen some drone video of a couple places south of Sutherland where the elk have taken up residence in the middle of a field, and I mean, we're talking acres and acres of damage where they've both eaten and just trampled the corn. So yeah, it can be a huge potential loss for the farmer in that respect.
Yeah, that is key, and that's a big thing when you get a small herd elk. It don't take many. It could be six or eight elk sitting in that field, and when you put them in their extended period of time, you're talking, well, they're going to be basically foraging on the field. Then they're going to be creating wallows out there in that field. Also, they start creating trails back and forth, and they just kind of go where they want. But then later on, when the corn dries out, that's when you get some really extensive damage, especially because it kind of coincides with the breeding time of elk. And they can really level a lot of corn out pretty fast in that time period when it's dry before harvest.
And you mentioned the term wallows, and a lot of that corn is irrigated, so it's pretty easy to get the water to start a wallow, and it doesn't take them long to do that.
Well, hence that's why the elk take up refuge in this area. That corn can get up to 10, 11 foot tall there, and basically they use that as a refuge. They got everything they want, their food, water, and basically a good place to hide.
And that's a key right there, is people ask, why are the elk there? It's because they have everything they need. They got the food, they got the shelter, cover. For an elk, it's like, we're on vacation. This is a great place to be.
You bet. That's like going to the beach where they bring you a drink every day.
Now, does the Game and Parks keep a list of landowners that would entertain the thought of having hunters on their ground, and then how does that work with being able to find a landowner that may let you hunt?
Specifically, we did have a list. We contacted some of these past landowners who had extensive damage, who've been very willing to allow access during hunting season free, and open up their ground to help fix the problems. we contacted a number of them before this season too, and also said they'd be willing to be put on a list. The vast majority of them called us very fast, within probably a couple hours after the day after the release, saying that they couldn't take any more hunters at this time, that they were full for the month for that hunting season. What is understandable because it did generate a lot of interest. So guys were looking, people didn't contact landowners other ways, just like a normal thing. It's people you know, people you've dealt with before. It's amazing how people can find a phone number or an address anymore. It makes it pretty easy in this world nowadays.
Now, I had a question about the current status of the hunt, because there was, at one time, there was a thought that it might get canceled, but you've answered that. It's still going to happen. It's going to be the month of July.
Yeah, it's currently happening right now.
Okay. How many permits have you sold?
As of yesterday, the end of the day, I think there's approximately 126 to 127 permits sold.
That's less than I thought there would be.
Pretty small number for the amount of area. And then you got to realize, too, I think when you start talking hunters, currently I'd probably say there's about 90 different hunters. A lot of guys do buy multiple tags.
Okay. Man, that'd fill up some freezer space in a hurry. Wow. That's a lot of meat when you're talking elk. For anybody that's never hunted elk or been around elk, I mean, we're talking something the size of a horse. That's a lot of meat there.
Well, as with a lot of hunters, a lot of guys like to share their meat with others too. So I'm sure part of that would play into it also.
Now, officially, when did the news release come out that this season was going to happen?
News release actually for this dropped last Tuesday afternoon. And it come out with a lot of interest awful fast. And as with anything new, there is a lot of interest and a lot of different opinions and thoughts on it for sure.
Were the landowners were they notified ahead of this, or did it catch them kind of by surprise?
I'm sure it caught a few of them by surprise, but we're always very open to individuals. We actually have multiple meetings throughout the year. We had elk landowner meeting last July in North Platte. We also have our big game end of season type meetings also to discuss anything on big game. Usually in January. But we actually brought in a specific meeting in this area to landowners. They're contacted either by email or mail. Not everybody was reached because it's impossible to get everybody's address, but we focused on the key areas where we did have elk and had issues with elk and landowners around those areas. So we did have a landowner meeting in Paxton back in mid-December.
Okay. Can you describe the geographical area, particularly on what we're talking about? We've generally referred to it as Southwest Nebraska, but can you tighten that definition up a little bit?
Well, I tighten it up a little bit, but I always say it's tough when you start putting stuff in perspective without seeing it.
Exactly.
So I'm going to say the best way to find any information on this season, what we have some great frequently asked questions we've answered and put together there for the public, the order of this season, anything basically pertaining to this, the map, application, all that process, it can be found online at outdoornebraska.gov/depredation. That will give you everything up to date as much as possible. It'll give you any information on it. It's a great source of information and a very good map there to visualize this area in general.
One of the concerns I heard just, you know, through the grapevine was rifles in cornfields and you can't see very far. And my comment was, you know, use a slug gun. And then I looked at the regs, and shotguns specifically aren't listed as one of the weapons that could be used. Would that be okay?
Well, along that line, I mean, you're talking safety-wise. It's more the efficiency of a weapon. The slug guns and stuff, you don't pick up a lot of velocity with those when shooting it. So we use our same legal definition for weapons as we do for our regular elk season. When you talk about safety-wise in fields, it's no different than any of our other hunting seasons when they do go on.
Same like, yeah, hunting in a river bottom is still reduced vision.
Yeah, same thing with our early elk season. They're hunting along these same cornfields with the same rifles also at the same time. That's definitely a thing. The responsibility of every hunter and shooter out there is knowing what is beyond and taking safe shots at anything you are hunting. It's a safety, number one safety thing to look at and view. And we've been very apparent with that. We actually put that out in the news release and actually even sent that to every one of our permit purchasers also, just letting them know about safety impacts, just some common sense stuff like that. That's definitely a concern we always have. But as we know, hunting is a very safe sport. We have very, very minimal safety issues.
Exactly.
As of accidents across the state on a yearly basis. And I'm pretty proud of our hunters on that end, because it speaks a lot about the state of Nebraska's hunters.
It does. And even more so when they've done some of the studies related to waterfowl season. Nebraska hunters are pretty good about knowing exactly what they want and can identify a teal from a mallard or a snow goose from a swan. They're pretty good at knowing what their game is and taking the shots at only what's supposed to be taken. So you're right. That's a plus for Nebraska hunters. With respect to hunting elk, you have a favorite elk rifle?
Oh, favorite elk rifle. Well, I do like to bow hunt myself, but needless to say, I say any or larger caliber rifles can do the job. Anything, I always look at something probably 30 cal or bigger, but they can all be a good rifle for sure. A lot of guys do like a 300 mag, something that has some pretty good power to reach out a little bit farther.
Right.
I've always been pretty consistent on the point. I always try to get close as possible. So my goal is I can handle a little bit smaller caliber stuff and take closer shots with some of these other rifles. My personal favorite rifle for anything all around is a 308, in my opinion. But
hard to go wrong with that.
But I don't like to argue rifles because everybody has their favorites.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone has a different different advantage on those ends, but there's definitely some good ones out there. And the type of ammunition you can get and how far they've come with that anymore, it's unbelievable what you can do with some different calibers anymore.
We got a couple seconds left, Dusty, so just generally, where can people go to get more information about all this?
Like I said, best information to get, I mean, you either call one of our offices, but the best information is go to outdoornebraska.gov/depredation, and that will find you all the information. I would like to add one special note here at the end. I'd like to thank all the landowners who've allowed access for this, and all the hunters with the interest in helping out with these depredation problems by working through this season. This is a great collaboration of landowners and hunters to fix some of these common problems we've had and to utilize hunters to fix these solutions.
Very good, sir. Thank you very much for taking the time to be on the show, and we'll talk to you somewhere down the road.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Rick. It was a pleasure talking.
That's it for this week, folks. We'll see you next time on another edition of the Outdoor Connection.